This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswein on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswein.
Okay, so we've heard of the TV shows Hoarding, Buried Alive. If you haven't, it's all about clutter in the home and how some, usually through traumas or emotions, has caused people to hoard or collect certain things or just not throw anything out. Very popular shows right now. Well, we can actually do the same thing with emotional clutter, sometimes without even knowing about it. And as we sort of shut away and try to hide these old pains and traumas, we create toxic patterns. So today we're going to talk about clearing emotional clutter. And we have brought author Donald Altman aboard. His book, Clearing Emotional Clutter, Mindfulness Practices for Letting Go of What's Blocking Your Fulfillment and Transformation. So sit down, everybody. Let's get ready to clear some clutter. Hey, Donald, how are you?
Hey, Lisa, I'm doing great, thanks.
Okay, so your book is perfect timing with the popularity of all of these shows, because it sort of piggybacks on that whole hoarding, buried alive. What is the difference between emotional clutter and then sort of the physical manifestation of that, which is, you know, someone who collects a lot of magazines or something like that?
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I think the emotional clutter can be just as devastating and block you from living the life you would like to live. And just imagine having all of the clutter of old past fears, worries, anxieties. I mean, your head can be so cluttered with things you can't even be present in this moment. And I've experienced that with people I've worked with, and it's great when they can start to remove that clutter.
So, I mean, isn't the number one clutter worry? Is worry clutter?
Yeah, worry is clutter. In fact, anxiety is another. I'd say anxiety and worry are probably the number one forms of clutter. There are, I think, 40% of all Americans have some kind of, 40 million Americans have some kind of anxiety, you know, clinical issue, clinically diagnosable anxiety problem. So that's huge, isn't it? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be one thing that's cluttering up your mind. Like the person I worked with, he went to Hawaii, this client of mine, because I'm a psychotherapist also, and when he came back, he said, I should have called you. He said, I was on this beautiful sand beach in Hawaii, and I was having a horrible time, because all I could do was think about all that clutter of all the things I had to do, and all I had all that worry in my head. He said, I couldn't enjoy sitting on that beautiful sand beach.
Why do we do it? Why do we stuff it all in there and hold on to it? Are we afraid that, what, we're going to fall apart if we don't have all of those things to think about?
Well, you know, I think a lot of it becomes a habit, and it's very much about how you use your awareness. And if you keep thinking about the same thing over and over, it actually creates a rut in the brain. You know, it's like rolling a big rock down a hill down the same direction over and over. You create kind of a pathway or a rut,
mm-hmm.
and that's exactly what happens with our thoughts. So we're actually kind of training the more we focus or dwell on a particular thought or worry, the more it becomes like just a thought habit. It doesn't really say anything about us, but it just becomes a habit of thinking. And we need to see that kind of clutter can actually be very devastating, can take us away from being present, and experiencing this moment and enjoying this moment.
Can people be addicted to negative thinking and to sort of holding on to past grudges? Can people actually be addicted to that?
I think so. Yeah, I think that actually there might be some kind of secondary gain. We feel good. It makes us feel in the right. We feel righteous, or we might feel that playing that victim card gives us some sense of power. But in fact, we're actually taking away our power when we're doing that. And that kind of addiction is like any kind of addiction, that it doesn't really let you be effective in your life as much as you could be. So, I want people to start to recognize that you're really not allowing yourself to be fulfilled to the extent that you could be if you're stuck in those old memories.
Okay, now you use a very you know, timely term in your book here. It's called inner Facebooking. So within the age of social media, I love that you threw this in the book. So explain to us, what does that mean and how can it help our need to hold on to that emotional clutter?
Yeah. So I have a whole chapter in Clearing Emotional Clutter called Inner Facebooking. And so, you know, Facebook's a great way to post what's happening in your life or to see what's happening in other people's lives. But in the same way, we're constantly putting up posts in our own minds, you know, our thoughts, our beliefs, and it represents a kind of second Facebook, an inner Facebook. You could almost think of it as an inner selfie. So we're constantly taking inner, you know, putting up selfies mentally of what's happening. And so it's good to start to notice, are my selfies affecting me in some way? Is my inner Facebook, if my inner Facebook posts are unhappy, if they're unflattering, it's no surprise then, is it, that we might feel bad or feel depressed or feel anxious. So what we want to do is to start to notice the Facebook posts that we're putting up. In fact, this is taught, Lisa, to the Navy SEALs. They're taught how to start to notice and put up positive posts in their mind, you know.
Really?
So it's important, yeah. So it's important to actually notice how negative posts, the negative Facebook's posts we're putting up could take away our energy, make us feel sad, make us feel depressed, make us feel fearful, or, you know, less confident. Mm-hmm. So we need to put up inner Facebook posts that can help us. And maybe that are more accurate, too. You know, we have, in the course of a day, scientists have said we have as many as 75,000 thoughts. That's a huge number of thoughts. But how many of those, and I want your audience to actually think about this for a moment, how many of those thoughts tell you something really profound about you? How many of those thoughts are accurate thoughts? Yeah, probably not too many, right?
Yeah,
but we can grab on to those thoughts as if, well, that's me, and it really isn't. So we need to know how to kind of be more accurate in how and more supportive of ourselves in our Facebook posts.
Well, and I think our inner Facebooking would be a little kinder than sometimes when we look on Facebook. And I am guilty of this. There have been times I've looked on Facebook and I could feel that I felt envious of somebody on this trip. And I went, ew, okay, I don't like that feeling. But it's why
right.
did I feel that?
Yeah.
So
you know, if that's affecting, imagine how our own thoughts are affecting us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be even, you know, and sometimes people will say, okay, I'm completely getting away from it. I'm not going to do this social media thing. When in fact, we're still doing it in our inner thoughts. We just have to make sure that it mirrors a really positive process.
What's great in the example that you gave, you noticed the envy thought, you noticed the inner Facebooking posts you were making, which is great. And that's all it is, really just kind of stepping back and looking inward. You know, that's an incredible skill we have. And it's just a matter of training yourself to do it more.
There is a part that I was reading through about you telling us to help find our strengths. And everyone,
right.
usually when they think of that, they think of the, you know, the cheesy thing that you get at the interview. Tell me your strengths and weaknesses and what, you know, but some of the examples that you give are actually, I don't think people would think of those as strengths. Can you expand on that a little?
Oh, sure, sure. And I think it's important because, you know, we can get very critical with ourselves and we're in a kind of critical culture where we're always looking at the weaknesses, but so sometimes it's hard for people to look at the things they're actually doing. So, for example, you know, you wake up in the morning and, you get up, you get your breakfast, you climb in the car to go to work, and people say, well, that's just my routine. That I didn't do anything. They had a strength there. But think about it now. You know, if you had breakfast, if you took that shower, brushed your teeth, that's self-care. That's actually a strength. Not everybody does that, right? You're taking care of yourself. If you're showing up at work on time, for example, that's the strength of timeliness, respect for others. Even if you've gone to the shopping mall, and when you go back out and you find your car in the parking lot and among that big sea of cars, that's the strength of memory. Right? We often tend to discount or diminish our own strength, but actually they're there throughout the day. They're with us. So what would that make you feel like to notice, oh, wow, I'm engaging in my strengths? You know, if you're at the workplace and you ask somebody, oh, can I get you a cup of coffee. I'm going to the coffee machine. If you do one little nice thing, that's the strength of hospitality or kindness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to start to assess and recognize our own strengths. And you know, it's not a form of bragging. You're really trying to be honest with yourself. And even if you notice a weakness, that's a strength of being able to notice a weakness.
Good.
That's a strength too, right?
Absolutely. And there's like, I know that you said that identified, there have been like, over 100?
Over 100 and, psychologists have identified far over 100 strengths that people can use. But here, can I give your listeners one little tool from the book that,
please.
And the book's filled with tools like this, how to use a strength?
Let's do it.
Yeah. So one thing you can do is I want you to think about one of your, in fact, write down your top three strengths, things that you feel are you really good at, or that you're effective, that help you and help other people. Write down three. If you can only come up with one, that's okay. If you can't come up with any, think of something that someone has told you as a strength that maybe you've discounted, but use that as your strength. And I want you to take the top strength, and every day this week, I want you to put that strength into application one time a day. Find a way to use that strength one time each day. At the end of the day, write it down. Just write it, make a little note, have a little journal, or write it in your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the week, I want you to look at all those times you've used that strength and how did it make you feel and how did it make that other person feel. And see if it doesn't affect and positively affect, you know, remove some of the old clutter thoughts you might have about yourself, the negative clutter.
Donald, this is great because I'm looking at the three I wrote down, and the first one I already exercised when I came into work today. And,
oh, that's excellent.
And I'm like, yay, I'm on track. One of the things, too, about strengths, because, and this is hard for some people, and it's where the negative self-talk kind of trails off, is that when it not only takes strength to give a compliment, it takes strength to receive one.
That's a wonderful thought. Yeah, it does. And that's the strength of your humility,
mm-hmm.
right? The strength of your humility, just trying to be humble and recognizing your strength of acceptance, self-acceptance. So yep. I can accept that, okay, somebody gave me this compliment, I can accept it.
Yeah, because usually people try and talk it away. If you say,
you
look nice today. Oh, this old thing I did, you know, and you're like, just take the compliment.
Yeah. I think I heard about a funny YouTuber, like three or four women friends, and one of them's complimenting another, and they all they're all dismissing their compliments.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like women. That sounds like my group here. So one of the things that can cause a lot of emotional clutter or can set it in motion is transitioning from one place to another, or job or relationship. Talk about that.
Yeah, this is a form of clutter that a lot of people don't think about, and I spend a lot of time in the book. I have a chapter talk about transitions. When we're in transition, and there are emotional transitions, emotional states, physical transitions from moving from one place to another, but when we're in transition, what happens is we're not sure what's going to happen next, and so it raises feelings of anxiety. So we need to know how to manage our transitions. And one thing that I like talk about is if you're transitioning during the day, try to reduce the number of transitions you're making. So instead of maybe changing, if you're working on a job on several different projects, see if you can work on each of those projects for a little longer period of time without having to transition. Let's say you have chores to do, errands to run. Let's say if you had five errands, so maybe on one day, instead of trying to do all five in one day, take two that are maybe in close proximity to another and do those two one day and take the other three the next day. If you can simplify in that way, it will make transitioning a lot easier. You know, there's also the transitioning with people in our lives. Every time that you leave a family member, for example, or come back, that's a major transition. And when you're leaving from your family, that is about connection and closure. You want to find a way to stay connected. Say something to that person about, have a great day. Give them a hug. Let them know I'll be in, we're going to text during the day or we'll give a call or something. It's about connection and closure. Or when you're entering, when you return home, it's all about safety and inclusion. That's another kind of important transition. So, get off the computer, really greet that family member face to face. And take a little time to, check in, how was your day? And so that's that Help them feel safe and included when they return home. Sometimes we forget about those rituals, the little rituals that we do when we come and go, and that can make a huge difference in our relationships, too.
Yeah, and that sort of goes hand in hand with whole developing of friendships, because you talk about that as a way of actually clearing some of the emotional clutter.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think that, in fact, the research shows, Lisa, that having a friend, having a social network is really important. If you don't have a social network, it's as bad for your health as being an alcoholic, smoking 15 cigarettes a day, and being obese, actually, believe it or not.
Oh.
That's the negative side of not having a social network. But for friends, I talk about the three seeds of friendship in the Clearing Emotional Clutter book and how to develop those. And those seeds are trust, and trust is very critical to building a friendship. And it's important to take time in building a friendship, and trust just and disclosing about yourself. Just do it at a natural pace, slowly, but allow that trust to build. Second seed, of course, is acceptance. Realizing that everybody has their flaws. Nobody's perfect. Your friend, you know, might be the greatest person in the world, but they're going to have flaws too, and that we can learn to forgive and accept that,
mm-hmm.
right? And we all have our own blind spots. We all have our own imperfections, and friendship's able to accept that,
yeah.
recognize that. And the last one is empathy, knowing that what is it like to, you know, be in your friend's shoes for a moment, to have that connection and that deeper understanding of their life, right? And that deepens a friendship, lets you feel really deeply connected. So if you develop these three, you'll really build a friendship garden in your life and have a lot of friends.
I'm loving hearing all of those because Remy and I, we just showed each other the three words that we wrote down about ourselves.
Uh-huh.
Empathy is one of mine, and we also both wrote kindness as well.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
We got to add in the patience. We're doing
wonderful.
There, and we're, we're doing really well. And isn't it true that, you know, when you cultivate these friendships too, it is okay for a friend to say, hey, guess what? You're over cluttered up there. Get rid of some of that because you've been negative or you've been angry or, I mean, can we do that as friends, right?
Yeah, we can do that as friends. And I think that, and that's where the trust comes in. We know that our friends are putting us really, they hold us in high esteem. They respect us and regard us highly. And so we can trust what they're saying. And that what they're saying comes from a sense of love and kindness and compassion. And so, Yeah, and so in order to hear that from our friends also, we got to kind of just sit back and listen, really allow ourselves to listen and open up. And that's the mutuality that friends have, right? It's not always that, I mean, you know, your friend might have a problem, so one time you get together, might be talking more about their issues. Maybe there's another time you're talking about more about yourself. But it's important to allow ourselves to really listen in a deeper way. And I even talk about, I even created an acronym, actually, that's one of the tools in the book. I call them lifestyle tools, and a mindful lifestyle tool for removing clutter that can help people listen in a more open way.
Yeah, here is the acronym. So hit us with that, because I love acronyms, so because they're so easy to remember.
Okay.
So we
yeah.
know it's here. So start with that H. What are we starting with?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so it's H-E-A-R. So what you can do, and by the way, you could use this in the moment, even if you're in the middle of an argument, if this will shift and change everything. So the H stands for hold all assumptions. So let go of your beliefs or your assumptions about a particular thing, even just for 3 minutes. You can put it on the shelf and come back to it anytime if you want. The idea here is to just empty your ego and get curious about what you're listening to, what you're hearing from the other person, and you know, just be a little more objective about it, and just get curious, okay?
Donald, can I interject here for just a minute? Because I want everybody to understand, when you say empty your ego, get curious, ego is a strong little sucker.
And oh, yeah.
That little you-know-what is going to try and hang in there and not let go.
Yeah, that's kind of the ego, the egocentric point of view, the I, the me, the my, the mine, and then and if we're holding on to that, it's hard to really hear what another person is saying.
Okay.
It's very tenacious. Yeah. Then the E is empathy. Empathy to engage with somebody, not to enrage. But again, that empathy, that understanding at a deeper level. In other words, you're entering the emotional world of that person. You don't have to agree with them, but you could understand maybe how important this is for them and how they feel. So you're just trying to understand their viewpoint. The A stands for absorb and accept. So just like a sponge absorbs the water on the top of a countertop, it doesn't slosh it around, it really just absorbs it. Allow yourself to absorb what you're hearing, maybe ask some questions that are clarifying so you can understand better. And then the acceptance part is just accepting that, okay, this is where this person is at, not having to want to change them, but just coming to a place of accepting, understanding with a greater sense of openness. Then the so the first three of these, H, the E, and the A, are about listening. And then the R is, how am I going to respond, right? And so the R stands for reflect, first reflect, then respect. So reflect means that maybe that you don't respond in that moment if you're still feeling upset or you're still feeling angry. Allow yourself to just say, you know, let's could talk about this later and respond later. Maybe you need to go back and reflect on it, see if you get any other insights. Maybe talk to a wise friend, somebody who you respect, and to get another viewpoint. And then when you're ready, when you're able to respond with kindness and insight and with respect, then is a time to respond with that other person.
You know, all of this that you're telling us to do or helping us to move forward, this isn't rocket science, people, but
right.
The ability to interact and undertake some of these things for some people is just as difficult to learn as rocket science.
Yeah, I mean, these are tremendous life skills, and I think they're very transformative. That's what got me excited about writing this book, mm-hmm. was about putting together work that I've been doing for many, many years, because I teach a lot of this to psychotherapists, and I teach psychologists. I teach them how to use these tools with their clients. So here I am directly teaching it and allowing people to understand it in ways that they can apply it and use it instantly. And it only takes really a few minutes a day to help you remove that clutter.
And you guys, this is a great book for you to start changing all of this. I know some of you out there are feeling completely overwhelmed. If nothing else, crack the book, try it, or work through the here that you just heard. Re-listen to this interview and start feeling better. It's Clearing Emotional Clutter, Mindfulness Practices for Letting Go of What's Blocking Your Fulfillment and Transformation. You can get a hold of this book, I believe, on Amazon. You can also check out Donald at mindfulpractices.com. We've got all the links on our website. We are coming down to the end of our program where we do the RL3, which is three silly, goofy questions that Donald has graciously agreed to answer. So here's the first one.
And I've been very curious to hear what they are. So,
all right. Well, this one is a little thought-provoking right off the top. Is science or art more essential to humanity?
Wow. You know, what I love about creativity is that it's the art of living, and it's I think we need science, but science can't be the whole picture. I think it needs to be a blend of the two.
I love it. How very on the fence of you. I like it. You get a little nod
to
both science and art.
Yeah.
That was good. All right. Here's question number two. Which vice would you indulge in if it had no negative side effects?
What would I indulge?
Vice.
Oh, vice.
Yeah. Which vice would you indulge in if it had no negative
side
effects?
It's kind of a funny. I'd probably eat more cheesecake.
I love that. Oh, my gosh. And it didn't have any sugar or calories.
Right,
it tasted just as good.
I haven't found one like that yet.
All right. Well, the third and final question that we have is, we'd love to find out what your fantasy name is. And the way we create the fantasy name is the first pet you ever had and the street you grew up on. What is your fantasy name?
Oh, my fantasy name would be... okay, let me see how I combine that. Smokey Lena.
Smokey Lena, hey. Well, Smokey Lena, it has been an absolute joy having you on our show today.
Well, same here, Lisa. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, good. So don't forget, everybody, mindfulpractices.com. Get Donald Altman's book, Clearing Emotional Clutter, and check out all the links on our page. Thanks again.
Oh, thank you. Bless you for the work you're doing.
Thanks so much.